Thank you, Matt. Good afternoon, everyone. Today I'm going to tell you a story about something that happened to me this week. And this story, it tied into what I'd been thinking about and preparing for this particular split sermon. And it's going to be a little bit of a Paul Harvey kind of a rest of the story type thing. I'm going to tell you this story, and then we're going to look at a section of scripture from Matthew chapter 16, and then we'll come back to the story toward the end. And for those who like titles, the title of this split sermon is Three Building Blocks of Christianity. Three Building Blocks of Christianity. So this week I was working in Columbus, Ohio, and I was up there, you know, doing my job, and I had a new man who started with me this week, and he went with another man that works with me out to Chesapeake, Virginia. And their work was completed on Thursday, and they Thursday morning left to come back home. And I met this man and talked with him, and he lived up in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And so Thursday night, he called me about 10:15, and he said, I need to get a room. I said, okay. I said, how close are you to home? He said, well, he said, I'm about 40 miles from Murfreesboro. He said, but I need to get a room. I said, well, by the time you stop and go in and check in a place, you can drive the other 40 miles or whatever, and you can be at home. He said, well, he said, there's a problem with that. He said, I gave up my apartment. And I said, you did what? He said, I gave up my apartment. He said, well, I figured with this job, I'm going to be traveling or whatever, and I would just go from job to job to job. I said, okay, we'll stop there. We'll pick it up at the end. So three building blocks of Christianity. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 16. We'll find those three building blocks in Matthew chapter 16. At the beginning of Matthew chapter 16, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they approach Christ, and they're looking for a sign. And I thought about this just a little bit. It seems odd in some ways that the Pharisees and Sadducees were together because they had a lot of differing beliefs. But they knew that Christ was probably going to be a problem to them, so I think they were kind of ganging up on him a little bit, and they're trying to trip him up here. And they ask him for this sign, and Christ tells them there won't be a sign given except for the sign of Jonah. Then he talks to his disciples, and he says to his disciples, verse 6, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Beware of their lifestyle. Beware of who they are. Watch these people. And the disciples, they thought they were, you know, in trouble with Christ for not bringing enough bread. And in verse 11, he says, how is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? He tells them again. In verse 12, it says, then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine, the teachings of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And so what he's saying to his disciples, he's saying to be alert, to be awake, to watch what's going on, because these false doctrines, they will silently and surreptitiously, just like leaven, they'll get into your life. And he's saying that watch the Pharisees, because if you study the Pharisees just a little bit, and I know you're all familiar with them, they liked the greed, they liked the power, they wanted the best seats, they wanted to be recognized, they wanted to be in authority. That was the life that they longed for. They did it to some degree in the auspices of the Bible, but they had their own list of rules, and Christ is saying, look, watch out for this worldly thinking. What they're talking about, what they're doing here. Then you drop on down to verse 21. It says, from that time Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised the third day. He tells them he's going to be murdered, to be killed by these people who's questioning him at the beginning of the chapter there. Verse 22 says, "Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you.' And Christ said, but he turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan, you are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men.'" He's telling Peter, in so many words, you're doing exactly what I just told you to beware of. You're thinking about things from man's point of view. Now, Peter was probably innocent enough. He wanted to keep his Lord and Master with him as long as he could. They had become friends. He'd been trained and taught by Christ. So in Peter's mind, he didn't want to lose that. But he was looking at it from his point of view. In some degrees, a selfish point of view. And Christ is looking at it from God's point of view. Christ knew what he had to do. He knew he had a commission to fulfill. And he's looking at it from God's point of view. And so he tells Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You're not thinking about this in the right way." And then in verse 24, he says, here's what you need to do. And these are the three building blocks of Christianity. It says, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me.'" Three things: deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. So, when we begin to look at this, we begin to think about it. Following Christ begins with denying yourself. All of these three, they kind of build one upon the other. So in order to follow Christ at the end, we have to deny ourselves at the beginning. So what does it mean to deny ourselves? What does it mean to deny self? And basically, what that means is we begin to say no to so many of the things that we would have said yes to before. Things that might give us temporary pleasure. Because we're looking at life through our vision. Things that please us. Things that make our life better. And sin, and especially in our old life, but even now we still battle it. Because sin didn't go away. But it becomes entrenched in us. It becomes a part of us. It's like an addiction to some degrees. It becomes a preoccupation with self in so many ways because we're looking to please ourselves. We're trying to seek that pleasure, whatever it is, and we find ways to do that. And it might be an actual addiction that we end up developing over time. It might be an addiction to alcohol or drugs. It might be an addiction to sex. It might be an addiction to food, coffee. I know I'm stepping on some toes there. But I mean, it could be an addiction to anything. And what it is saying when you begin to deny yourself, you begin to say no to these things that are harmful to you. You begin to say no to doing things the way the world says to do it. Now, when you look at an addiction, it has three basic components involved in it. There's a mental obsession with it. Then there's actually a physical craving that develops. And then that eventually leads to a spiritual void. Now, think about it. Sometimes people might be addicted again to whatever it is that you're thinking about. You begin to think about this thing. And you, man, I want a drink, or I want a cigarette, or I want to go eat this extra piece of pie. I'm good at the pie. But it's whatever it is, and you begin to think about it, and it rolls around in your mind. And then that craving, over time, it develops. And eventually you give in to that craving. And in our former life, we didn't think a lot about it. It was just, hey, let's have at it. Go do what you will. But Christ says, no, we do things differently. We deny ourselves. We say no to these things. And eventually that leads to a spiritual void. If you will, turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, we'll look at verse 14 and 15. James chapter 1, verse 14 and 15 says, "But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed." When we're drawn away by things that we want, that pleases us, that fulfills self, that feeds that addiction, whatever it might be. And we talk about addictions of things, but it might be an addiction to lying. You know, you may get in trouble with the boss and you might say, "Hey, I can tell a little lie and that's going to please me because I'm not going to be in trouble with the boss." And you can take any sin and you can put that in there and you can start thinking about it, because that's where it all begins, is right here in your mind. I don't want to be in trouble. I don't want to be uncomfortable. But sometimes when we accept this calling, there is a certain degree of uncomfortableness with it, because we begin to say no. And saying no is a difficult thing to do for a lot of people. It's difficult for me to say no to people, to say no to things. But Christ says, "I want you to deny yourself these pleasures. They may be temporary benefits to you, but they're not long-lasting benefits." The same chapter, James chapter 4, look at verse 1 through 3. It says, "Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members?" Now, you can look at this, and it could be fights among people, but you can also look at this as things that war within your mind, within your body. These physical cravings that you might want to give into, whatever it is. And there's a desire for pleasure. And again, it begins to roll around in your mind. And Christ says, no, you have to deny these things. You have to say no to these things. Verse 2, it says, "You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war. Yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures," serving self, getting everything that we want instead of giving what God wants. And ultimately, when we give in to these sins, whatever it might be, it creates that spiritual void. Because what does sin do? It separates us from God. And the more we do it, we don't want to talk with God about it because, "Well, I've done this or I've done that. I'm just going to ignore it, and I'm not going to pray today because I know what I've done. I'm ashamed of what I've done." And it creates a gap, and there's an emptiness in there. And it makes it able to take over more and more. But Christ says, don't do that. He says, deny yourself these things and begin to obey what I say do. Begin to do these good things. So, what we're supposed to do, Philippians 2, verse 12 and 13. This is the antidote to saying yes to all of these harmful things. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12, the Apostle Paul says, "Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." You have to be the one to deny yourself. I can't do it for you. You can't do it for me. You have to work it out. And it's between you and God, you and Christ. And you have to be the one to say no. Verse 13 says, "For it is God who works in you both to will and to do for His good pleasure." Not for yourself, but to do and to serve God. So when we're called into this church, into this life, we give up ourselves. We begin to kill and destroy that old man. And we begin to serve God. We serve Christ and we do it His way. We serve at His pleasure. You've heard people say, "I serve at the pleasure of the president." We serve at the pleasure of God and Jesus Christ. To do their will, not to do our will. So therefore, we deny ourselves. Now, let's go back to Matthew chapter 16. We'll look at verse 24 again. It says, then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So take up our cross. What does it mean to take up our cross? Now, Christ had previously told the disciples that he was going to Jerusalem, that he was going to die, that he was going to be murdered. And when he said this, take up your cross, they would have made the connection between that and the crucifixion. And when someone was being crucified, most of the time they drug or carried their own cross, and it was a big burden to them, and it was a weight to them. And sometimes as we begin to come into this life, and we live this life, we separate ourselves from the world, and our friends and our family, they look at us, and they ridicule us, and they say, what are you doing, man? You know, you're going to live this crazy lifestyle. But Christ says, no, you take up your cross, and you do this. And we live a little differently at that point, and our lives begin to change. And so taking up our cross is a continuation of denying ourselves, but it's a lifelong pursuit of becoming like Jesus Christ. And we take up our cross each and every day. We fight the fight every single day. And people do look at us. You look at the world today, you can be anything that you want to be except a Christian. And people mock us. People ridicule us. And sometimes it's a struggle to have to tell your boss you're not going to work on the Sabbath. Sometimes it's a struggle to get off for the holy days. And you go down the list of different things. And in that sense only, it's a burden. God's word is not a burden. God's life is not a burden. It's for our good. And Christ tells us that. But sometimes when we take up our cross, it's at odds with the world. And we live differently. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4. We'll look at verse 1 through 4. First Peter 4, verse 1, it says, therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind, the mind of Jesus Christ. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. So as we begin to deny ourselves, as we begin to say no to these different things, then we begin to cease from sin. We begin to grow. We begin to produce the fruits of the Spirit. Verse 2, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in this flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. So from here forward, from that time forward, we serve God. We don't serve ourselves. We're not supposed to. We do it the way God said to do it. And we serve the will of God. We do what he says to do. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. You know, we think about these things, and we were talking about addictions before. You know, what little idol do we give in to? I got to have a drink. I got to have a cigarette. I got to have this food. I got to have this coffee. I got to have this. I got to have that. What is it that we begin to idolize that we don't say no to? Verse 4, it says, in regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. You've come out of that, and you're living your life differently. And they look at you odd. There's a man at home. He's dead now, but he said, when I quit drinking, I don't have any friends anymore. And it's a true story. When you come out of that life, you leave that lifestyle and those friends behind. But look what we gain. We have friends here. We have family here. And it's been said before, and I totally agree, spirit's thicker than blood. Blood's thicker than water, so look what we've got here. So yeah, we left something behind, but look at everything that you gain. Or maybe I should do it like that. But no, it's a beautiful life that we're called into. So when we begin to deny ourselves, It's not a punishment. It's not a burden. And it's a lifelong pursuit. It's an everyday pursuit of seeking to be like Jesus Christ. So when we take up our cross, it's every single day. And our goal that day is to emulate who Jesus Christ is. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 16. We'll look at verse 25 and 26. Matthew 16, verse 25 and 26. It says, "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So, yeah, we give up something, but we gain eternity. We gain life in God's kingdom. And, quite frankly, we gain peace of mind during this life. We gain contentment. We gain so much right here, right now, while we're being trained and taught. Verse 26 says, "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works." So what we spend that lifetime doing, there's a reward at the end of it waiting on us. So how much work, how much effort do we want to put into carrying our cross each and every day? And as we begin to carry this cross, we subject ourselves to God's will. And then we begin to develop the fruit of the Spirit. We develop love and joy and peace and patience and kindness, tenderness, gentleness, humility, all of these different things. We learn to suffer long and forbear with one another. We learn self-control. I heard a sermon one time and I thought it was put quite brilliantly. It said that love and self-control are the bookends of the fruits of the Spirit, and it holds everything together. And I think that's a wonderful picture of that, because you have to have both. In order to deny yourself and in order to take up your cross, you have to have self-control. And ultimately, all of that leads to learning to love and be loved like God and Christ are love. And I think that's a wonderful analogy, that it's the bookends and it holds all of these other fruits together in the middle of it. And ultimately, these are the building blocks to spiritual maturity. And then that way, when Christ returns, we're allowed to rise up and meet him and be a part of that. Now, verse 24 again. "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me.'" So, at this point, we are learning to deny ourselves. We're developing these fruits of the Spirit. We're carrying our cross. We're taking it up each and every day. And Christ says to follow me. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean to follow me? Now, here comes the rest of the story. This man called me on Thursday night. It's about 10:15. And for those that don't know, I'm an early riser. So I was in the bed. I'm asleep. So I'm roused out of sleep, awake. He tells me this, what I think is an insane story. And he's like, "I need this room." And so, anyway, I tell him to stop, go in, I'll take care of him a room or whatever. And I'm agitated because I was woke up and everything. So he goes in to this place, he comes back out and he calls me. He says, "That place was $10 more than I want to spend." I'm like, "Okay, that's fine." He says, "I'm going to go a few miles up the road and find another place." So I'm awake at this point, waiting on him to go up the road, find another place. And he calls back and he says, "I've got a man on the phone. He's from one of the internet booking sites or whatever. Said he's going to help us out." And he puts this man on the phone and he did not speak English very well. And I could not understand a word he said. And so we're in this long 10 or 15 minute back and forth. And I'm like, what did you say? I don't understand what you're saying. You got to tell me more than this. Can I talk to a supervisor? I don't, back and forth, back and forth. finally we go through it all. He says, I'm able to get this man a room at the right price. I give him my credit card number over the phone. He says, now he will have to present this card when he's checking in. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. This man's 40 miles outside of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. As you can imagine, I was agitated. I was frustrated. I was angry. This man needed my help. I was mad because I'd been woken up from my sleep. I was thinking, what are you doing, man? You're interrupting my whole night here. Now, I called him back. I said, this isn't going to work. He said, oh, that's okay. I'll go stay with a friend. So by this point, I'm just absolutely furious. Just furious. And so anyway, I never yelled at him, but I had a few things that I wanted to say to him. Oh, and I did. Now, I tell you this story. What does that have to do with following Christ? This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where Christianity comes into play. It tells who you are as a person. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. We'll look at the last half of the last verse of 1 Corinthians chapter 12. The Apostle Paul says, and yet I show you a more excellent way. I show you a better way to do this. In chapter 13, verse 1, it says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but I have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. I know about the Sabbath. I know about the holy days. I know about tithing. I know about Adam and Eve, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Samuel, Saul. You go through them all. I know about them. Elijah, Daniel. I know about Christ and the apostles. But when this man called me on Thursday night, did I show him love? Verse 4, it says, love suffers long. I was agitated, aggravated, angry. I cannot say that I suffered long the way I should. Love is kind. I cannot say I was kind to either of these men that I spoke to that night. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Love is not puffed up. In my mind, I'm thinking, what in the world do you mean calling me, waking me out of my good night's sleep? How dare you interrupt me? Love does not behave rudely. I didn't make him feel like everything was going to be okay. He knew I was aggravated. He knew I was angry. Does not seek its own. I wanted to go back to sleep. I didn't want to be bothered. I wanted him to hang up the phone, go down the road and take care of his own issues. It's not provoked. I was provoked. Believe me, I was provoked. I was angry. I was aggravated at him for calling me. It thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things. Did I bear that correctly? Believes all things. It hopes all things. I hoped he would hang up the phone and go on. I don't think that's what this means here. It endures all things. And I lay down and I flopped and I flipped because it bothered me after I hung up the phone. After the opportunity had passed by. And we have to seize the moment, and it has to be who we are. And my character showed through there. And I've got a lot of work to do. And I would say, if we shared stories throughout this room, we could all say something similar. And we all have work to do, because there's going to come a time when we're resurrected, and billions upon billions of people are going to come up, and we're going to have to teach them this. And in order to teach it, we have to be it. It has to be who we are. So I've got a lot of work to do. Verse 13, it says, "Now abide faith, hope, love." These three. But the greatest of these is love. To show that love. So brethren, I hope that this will be some benefit to us all. I hope it'll give us something to think about. But let me say this. When you get in these situations like I was in, and you drop the ball. I dropped the ball Thursday night. I made a mistake. Get up. Keep striving. Keep working. Keep digging deep. When you fall down, get up. You get knocked down, get up. When you're down, you just think you can't go one more step, get up. Go do what God says. Keep working. Keep growing. Until you hear God in Christ say, "Well done, good and faithful servant."